Singles Day by Samantha Murray. Narrated by Catherine Ho.
Singles Day, or Guangkunjie, Bear Sticks Holiday, originated in China and had become a global phenomenon, with the exception of most of the no-go zoo countries, by the mid-2030s. Singles Day is now unrivaled as the world's largest shopping festival, with revenue and purchasing records continuing to be smashed every year by billions upon billions of dollars. Singles Day is held on the 11th of November annually, the so-called Double 11 date, where the one represents an individual who is alone. By 2043, with Earth's population continuing to rise more sharply than predicted, the coalition of Earth's governments had restricted Singles Day savings to those who were, as the name had always implied, single, in one of the many combined efforts to encourage the slowing of population growth. Yuyan, Hangzhou, China. If you timed it right, Westlake could sometimes almost approach a feeling of solitude. It was a very popular destination, both with tourists and locals, lovers and families, and groups arriving by the busload. But after the restaurants were closing, with the sun dropped behind the horizon, on the eve of Singles Day, where most preferred the immersive shopping experience they could find in their own homes, you could imagine what it was like to not live in a city of so many million people, on a planet that groaned under the weight of nearly 11 billion. You could breathe. Yuyan breathed deeply. It was a misty night. There were no stars to see, but the mountains that embraced the lake on three sides were obscured, and the lights from the dwellings halfway up the hillside looked like they were suspended above the lake, wavering and flickering like a borealis. There was still the faint scent of the osmanthus trees, and some of them were lit beneath with little lights, glowing like golden flames in the growing dark. All of the little traditional wooden rowing boats had returned to the shore now and were dark shapes docked by the water's edge. Westlake, if you timed it right, was Yuyan's favorite place to be in the world. Stories and legends were woven around the lake, and it was like wrapping yourself up in a blanket of your childhood. Yuyan's favorite was the story about the Lady White Snake, who changed herself from a serpent spirit into a beautiful woman for the love of Xishen, young scholar. They'd met on the broken bridge, which looked as if it was sinking down into the water, when he'd offered her his umbrella. She'd brought Robert here back in the early days when they were first dating. He'd kissed her quickly and furtively as they'd paused on the broken bridge of legend, of heartbreak, even though people streamed past them. This evening, Robert was at his unit, if it could be called that, small, gray, and windowless, like those that housed many of the young working-class men. He could stand in the middle and almost touch his hands to either side of the autoclaved precast concrete walls. Yuyan had brought him a little plant as a gift once, but lack of direct sunlight and, she suspected, lack of watering from Robert had led to its demise. She always saw less and less of Robert as Singles Day approached, and his excitement would rise in inverse proportion till it was palpable. Many of Yuyan's friends spent much of their leisure time VR gaming, but Robert was not into those things. Singles Day, however, was something else. This year, Robert was certain his bid to buy his own apartment, a proper apartment, would be successful. His own apartment, in one of the wind farm zones, with windows. Their own apartment, with room enough for two, maybe room enough for three. Here, where no one was watching, Yuyan let her hand stray to her belly, as she had to consciously stop herself from doing most of the time. Secret child. Hidden child. If Robert procured the apartment on Singles Day, he would do so at a remarkable discount. Prices were slashed on this day of the year, the crux of all discounts, for this one day only. Only singles were entitled to the savings, though, of course. Married folk or those in established relationships were ineligible. It hadn't always been this way, but for 20 years, the shopping benefits had been tied to the non-attached status of the populace. It was to encourage people to remain single longer, Yu Yan knew, to make sure everything was in place before starting the journey as a family, if they chose. It made sense. In so many ways, it made sense. Yu Yan was starting to feel the chill now as the temperature dropped rapidly. She thought of Lady Whitesnake, waiting, and wanting to become human for the sake of her love, even though it took lifetimes. She'd gone to see Robert earlier. He hadn't been expecting her, but there were always things in your day that were unexpected. Surprising child. Beloved child. Unexpected child. Not a good night for us to go out, he'd said. They'll think we're together. Are we together? Yu Yan had tried to say it lightly, in jest, but she wasn't sure if it had come out sounding that way. Robert had run his finger underneath her chin, but despite the tenderness of the gesture, Yu Yan had felt the impatience, too. Well, he'd said in a teasing tone that had all the lightness hers had tried for. Not officially. Yu Yan had smiled up at him. When Yu Yan was among people, and it was hard with the population of Earth cresting new and unsustainable levels every day to not be among people, she smiled often. She smiled when she was uncertain or when she was trying to get a point across, when she was in a crowd or meeting new people. It was a social instinct, the way she communicated, a way of filling the gaps within a conversation. "You're always so happy," people said to her. Casual acquaintances, colleagues, and friends alike. "You're so happy." Even Robert, especially Robert. "It's what first drew me towards you," he'd said more than once. "You always look so happy." "Am I?" Yu Yan would ask herself when he said that. She didn't think so. It wasn't a lie, but it wasn't the truth either. She would stop one day. Stop smiling at everyone. One day, she would not care any more about what people thought or want them all desperately to like her. She would be old and cantankerous. It was an appealing thought. G. Canberra, Australia. G paid for all her Singles' Day shopping with a smile. She knew, in fact, that she didn't have to actually smile for the transaction to go through. The facial recognition targeted many key points of her face, and its deep convolutional neural network really didn't care which expression she wore. But the slogan was, "Smile to pay," as it had always been, and faint strains of old advertising jingles she'd known as a kid seemed to float by just under the surface of her mind. And she rather thought that her smile had been a good one this time, a natural curve to her lips instead of the fixed grimace that she'd tended to struggle with. Of course, there was no one there to see. And in the past, she'd often thought she'd succeeded in smiling appropriately, only to have people's eyes get a little skittish and nervy, which probably meant she'd not managed it quite as well as she'd thought. G practiced smiling 50 times every morning in her mirror. Sometimes she cheated a little and skimped out with 20 or 30, but not often. Every morning, the same routine as her psych had instructed. Think of something pleasing with a positive association. Creamy coffee, lots of sugar, real coffee. Tug the corners of her mouth upwards, watching to see that her reflection didn't look creepy. Think of something else, avocados. Before they were extinct, drizzled with olive oil or smashed with lime and chili. Smile, show her teeth, then let her facial muscles relax before the smile hardened on her face into a rigor mortis-like grimace. Think of something else. Imagine she's just been given a raise. Smile, again, smile. Watch the creases at the corner of her mouth. Think of something else. Imagine her sister is calling her on the phone. No, That one is not straightforward. Now her smile is broadening. Too much. No, no. Think of something else. Not Antonia either, no. That's not right. The telescope she used to have when she was a kid. That's right. The way she felt out there alone with the universe. Like she was filled up with the night and the stars. Now smile. Curve her lips. Just a little smile. That's right. Smile. G had heard, years ago, of a mirror that only showed the reflection of someone when they smiled. It was meant for cancer sufferers to uplift their spirits and hence boost their immune systems, or some crock of rubbish and erasure. It was a flawed and stupid idea, and obviously hadn't taken off. But G sometimes found herself wishing for a mirror like that of her own. Perhaps it worked backwards, too. If you weren't smiling, you were invisible. There was camouflage in that. Sometimes she would have settled for being invisible. Xanthi, Minnesota, USA. It was a long way down. The buildings were dazzlingly high, stretching both above and below her. The street was so very far away that she felt an encroaching vertigo, and there were even a couple of birds circling below. Gulls, it looked like. Gulls are a seabird, said one part of her mind. And I am a long, long way from the sea. Take a step, said a voice, her brother's voice. Xanthi inched forward on the narrow plank, closer to the very end. It was a very, very long way down. Jump, said her brother. You can do it. The plank felt like carpet fibers under her feet, but all around her and beneath were just glinting buildings and space and sky. Xanthi swayed a little. I can't, she said. You can. Just jump, came the voice again. You know it's not real. I know, Xanthi said, her toes gripping carpet. But it feels real. It's much scarier than I thought it would be. It's the war of your conscious mind over your animal brain, your amygdala, said her brother. You know that. You know what you have to do. But it's not only things that are real that you have to be scared of, thought Xanthi. And who is to say that it is your conscious brain that is always right? Maybe there is a truth to this feeling. She inched an almost imperceptible amount forwards anyway. A light flickered in the upper top left of her vision, and a low bell tone sounded. Xanthi slow-blinked twice to exit and retracted the side screens of her glasses, and the scene became the small box that was her living room. And when she folded her bed out from the wall, bedroom as well. Her brother's form reclined on the sofa, his feet crossed at the ankles, his hand under his chin, a smile ghosting over his face. Package, Xanthi said to him, opening the door to her very small, squat gray balcony. Just wide enough for her to stand out there, but hardly even sit down. Where there was a drone-delivered parcel from her Singles Day shopping. The low cloud cover had the pollution level spiking, and on her tongue was the acrid, slightly burnt taste to the air, so she retrieved her soft and lumpy package and shut the door hurriedly. It's my dress, she exclaimed. She never usually wore dresses, preferring the sleek utilitarianism of her jumpsuits with built-in sensor gloves. But this had popped up in her AR catalog when she was looking at cupboard storage. There it had been, hanging in her built-in wardrobe with a few other items, as if to illustrate how perfectly they fit. She had lingered, fingering the fabric and holding it up against her, then had moved on, only to return later and add it to her shopping cart queue. The dress came to below her knees and looked like it was made of the ocean, deeper blues, brightening into waves of cerulean and green, tipped with white. Her family had lived by the coast until Xanthi was almost 12, and Xanthi missed it with a deep and fundamental ache. If she swam out far enough, she could be alone, or as good as alone. Alone and yet not boxed in, caged, limited. Alone and expansive, alone and infinite, floating, not touching the ground. She was no longer connected to the exhausted heaving of the planet, jam-packed, past capacity, with swarming, teeming humanity. But, said her brother, with that wry tone in his voice, where are you going to wear it? Xanthi had not been outside her apartment in nearly 2 years. I'm going to wear it right here, she said, and threw a fringed cushion, another of her Singles Day purchases, at his head, which of course failed to connect. Xanthi moved away from him dismissively to the small tiled area that demarked her kitchen and picked up her spray bottle to mist her mushrooms with water. The cardboard boxes lined her wall, using agricultural waste for cultivation. The latest crop were blooming out of their box, the caps just starting to invert. Oyster mushrooms, these ones, with a velvety texture and a mild, delicate flavor, and they'd be ready to stir-fry tonight. Xanthi realized she was hungry. Another bell tone, this one deeper and richer somehow than before. Xanthi blinked to the right, and the unfolding message floated in front of her, unfurling in shimmering, shining gold. Congratulations, it said. Three of the four great ships had already left the Earth. Coming events cast their shadows before them was the first, but also the slowest, with a less direct course. The second, the East Wind, had left Earth 18 months later, but had arrived only weeks afterwards. The third, it sings because it has a song, was mere days away from approaching the rift now. Peace Begins with a Smile was currently in lower Earth orbit, awaiting her final launch status checks, and, of course, her cargo. Karen, Utrecht, the Netherlands. The message was government ID encrypted and verified and burnished brightly. Congratulations, it began. Karen had squeezed onto the train, the station attendants, with their pristine white gloves, gently applying pressure to push the last passengers on board. Bodies pressed against her, swaying with the movement of the train, warmth and breath mingling together, eyes averted. Brightly colored moving verts on the walls of the station. More faces, smiling, teeth perfectly white and straight, endorsing everything from breath freshener to neural implants to sleep inhibitors to facial mods. All flashing by while she traveled in a curved container full of people and empty of anything else. Peace Begins with a Smile was to be the fourth great ship to leave the Earth. The Earth, where all of them had found life, where everything had started, even though the planet was suffering under the reign of people who had not treated her well. It felt disloyal somehow, these great, beautiful ships that headed away and did not come back. Karen knew about it, of course. It was impossible not to have heard, but it was her sister Vic who was obsessed by it. It was Vic who had told her, it must have been 5 years ago, that Peace Begins with a Smile had its long central grav walkway called the Corridor of Joy, that the carbon nanotubes were sprung to release sounds akin to laughter in different tones and volumes, depending on where you trod and how fast you moved. Vic had been entranced by this idea, but Karen had always wondered whether you would feel that the floor and walls were laughing at you, whether you would tire of the incessant amusement and long for peace and quiet, gentle steps where no one could hear you coming. Karen leaned with all her slight weight and pushed and maneuvered her way off the train as the doors opened at Utrecht Centrale. She leaned against a steel column and let people team around her. If she had this right, through her use of Smile to Pay for her purchases made on Singles Day 11/11, she had been in the draw and had won, subject to some conditions and caveats, passage on the great ship, Peace Begins with a Smile. Bound for Zoria, beautiful green and blue sister planet. So far, so very far away. Leaving in less than 3 months' time. Leaving. The Earth. Karen slid down the column a little. It was incredible and absurd. It was the opportunity of a lifetime, the opportunity of nearly 11 billion lifetimes, all of them happening around her right now. Karen's breath hitched in her throat. She read the message over and over. She did not smile. Karen had been a solemn child. She'd heard, "You'd be much prettier if you smiled," more times than she could count. And, "Try smiling. Your face won't crack if you smile. Let me see you smile. I'll give you a dollar if you smile." She had been offered many things in exchange for her smiles at various times. A dollar, a sweet, a kiss. She usually declined. It wasn't that she never smiled. It was that a smile seemed to come up from deep inside her, from far away. It had to be earned. It meant something. Smiles were not for strangers, for casual acquaintances, for people on the street and in the shops. She gave her smiles to the people she loved, a rare gift. Tears also were rare. Karen had to be devastated before they would surface from the well deep inside her. "You can tell you apart from your sister. She's the one who smiles." School friends had told her some variant of this since she was very young. It was true. Vic was 2 minutes younger than her, and she wore her emotions on the outside of her skin, laughing, crying, dancing, or raging. She shimmered like a raindrop, whereas Karen was, what? A deep, slow-moving river, maybe. "Yu Yan. Congratulations," the message had said. And Yu Yan had felt a sudden internal thud, because congratulations was a word people said at other times, for other reasons. And it was a word she didn't know if she would hear from anyone when she told her news. But this was something very different. The hand she rested on her stomach was shaking. Zarya was a dream, a beautiful, faraway dream. She could remember its discovery when she'd been a small child. The world had fallen in love with Zarya, so like the earth, but so new and clean and empty. Odd, strange life, moving deep in her oceans, which covered even more of her surface than Earth's, but only vegetative masses on land. "When I live on Zarya," was the game they used to play, all the little girls, pigtailed with bright bare faces, in their little, narrow outer city school, a dream they all shared. The first two great ships had arrived planetside already, although it took a long time to receive messages back through the rift. There were people who'd been born here on Earth, living their lives on Zarya right now, breathing her oxygen, having children who had room to play, and the whole vast planet to explore. Having children with room to play. And she, against astronomical and insane odds, had smiled. Smiled to pay for her new kitchen appliances and her new work skirts and her skincare products. And now she was offered passage on "Peace Begins with a Smile," which everyone said was the most sleek and darkly beautiful great ship yet. Passage for one. There were things Yu Yan had not bought in the Singles Day sales: a crib, a pram, bottles or diapers or comforters. Singles Day was on the 11th of November because the one was meant to represent a person who was alone. She was not a one. She was a two. Or a three? Secret child. Impossible child. Forbidden child. G. G's face contorted, the golden message still shining forefront in her vision. How could you want something so long and so deeply, but never even acknowledge it to yourself, and then have it given to you out of the blue of the sky you might see one day on a planet far away? If anyone had been with G, they would have thought her broken and devastated, bent over and racked, as if with pain, tears that she never usually cried, streaming down her face. When Jeannie was a baby, she never cried. "She's so contented. She's so peaceful. You're so lucky," other people told her mother. Jeannie's mother had tried to feel lucky. She didn't mention how, when she played peekaboo with her baby or blew raspberries on her fat little stomach, Jeannie just looked at her and blinked. How when Jeannie was older and beginning to walk, she had tripped over her feet and banged into the base of the bed, blackening her small eye and bruising the side of her face in awful purple and yellow, and she had giggled merrily for 20 minutes. It was the first time her mother had heard her laugh. When Jeannie's sister had been born, her mother funneled all of her emotional energy into the child who would smile when she saw her coming, the child she understood. G wiped her face and instructed her phone to call her sister. Hi, Jeannie's sister Davinia's voice said brightly. I can't answer your call right now, but please leave a message. She's got a new job. She's busy. She's just always in the middle of something, thought G. She knew her sister bore her no resentment, at least rationally. She knew Davinia understood. She also knew that way down at the beating heart of things, that made no difference at all. Xanthi. It says it's confidential, she said, her voice trembling, although she didn't know what emotion was making it shake so. Shock, probably. Who would tell you anyway, kitten? Her brother said. Her dad used to call her kitten. I've got friends, she said, resenting the defensive note in her voice. Online, she added, wishing she had another cushion to throw, although she knew he needled her on purpose. But it doesn't matter. It's ludicrous anyway. I can't go. There is no way. I couldn't. You don't want to go? Her brother asked innocently. She didn't look at him, but she already knew the expression he would be wearing. I can't, she said. I'm not going to go. I can't. Her brother said something else then, but she wasn't listening to him. Because when she'd said she wasn't going to go, it had felt like something was dropping away from her, plummeting down, down to the center of the earth, like her heart or her future. She'd felt like this the day of the accident, the day she'd lost her family. I can't, she said again, softly. She knew now that there was nothing she had ever wanted more than to fly into a sea of stars and arrive, finally, at Zoria, shining in space. Nothing she had ever wanted more, and it was completely impossible. Karen. The HSL train up to her sister's unit was full, and Karen had to stand, squashed up against two men in suits and a teenage girl who had her head absently to one side and AVR glasses on, obviously VR gaming. It was only a 45-minute trip, but Karen realized she couldn't remember the last time she had made it. A year ago? More? Vic lived in a densely packed apartment precinct, over high scrapers shading the narrow streets from the glare of the midday sun, but not relieving the rising humidity. Drones moved busily overhead, providing the occasional flash in the periphery as they caught the light of the sun. Her sister opened the door. Hi, clone, she said. Karen thought her sister looked tired. Hi, transporter accident, she said in response. Reflection, her sister said. Afterbirth, she countered. A faint smile drifted over Vic's face. Come in, she said. It had been more than a year, probably. The apartment felt different somehow, more sparse. There used to be a large print in the entryway, hadn't there? Mountains or something? The off-white wall was bare now. I thought you both might be busy on a Saturday, Karen said, as she turned into the small lounge before the silence of the apartment crept up on her. And there was something about her sister's face that matched the apartment somehow. More silent, more sparse. Lusa left me, Vic said, the words blunt-edged and taking up too much space in the small room. Oh, I'm sorry, Karen offered. You didn't say. Her sister shrugged, and Karen could read the words behind the gesture. We don't say a lot these days. Karen had liked Lusa, or maybe liked wasn't the right word. She had envied Vic the subtle affection and warmth that the two showed in public, the way they pooled their money to buy real coffee for weekends, the way Lusa had looked at Vic with laughter in her eyes. Vic had always been easy with relationships, falling in and out of them with casual grace, crying tempestuous tears, and then being all excited over a new fling only weeks later. It had always been harder for Karen. "I'm just as pretty as you are. Why doesn't anyone look at me that way?" she had thought, watching the way Lusa had looked at her sister. It had been around 5 years ago that her sister had started seeing Lusa, and she had not disappeared quickly like the others. Lusa had been different. Lusa had stuck. Karen suddenly realized that she would never see Lusa again either. Not that that was the thing that mattered. Or it shouldn't be a thing that mattered. "Your hair got long," she said to her sister. It had been cropped close to Vic's head the last time she'd seen her. Definitely more than a year ago then. "Yours got short," Vic said. Karen ran her hand across the back of her short, shaved undercut. "Just last week," she said, writhing a little inwardly at how trivial their words were. Lusa was gone. Not a thing that mattered, not to her. Not a thing that was allowed to matter. She hadn't seen her sister in a long time. "You're looking good," her sister added. "Thanks," said Karen, a little surprised. "It's all in the DNA." Karen sat on the little sofa and Vic brought her coffee. Not real coffee, Karen saw. "When did Lusa go?" Karen said. She had not meant to ask that. Her sister shrugged again, which wasn't a gesture Karen had associated with her sister in the past. 2 months ago, almost," she said. Her sister's face was quiet, unruffled, still. Not like the Vic Karen was used to. Her face mobile with one emotion or another. It was like looking into a mirror. "I'm sorry," Karen said again. And she was this time, truly. Again, that shrug. "What's been going on in your life then, DNA?" Karen dropped her gaze and played with the hem of her top. "Confidential." Then she looked up into her sister's eyes. Light clear brown, flecking into green, exactly like her own, except they weren't really, were they? The striations of the iris were different, solely individual, and an image with enough resolution could tell them apart. It was Vic who had told her that, a long time ago. Vic had always been very interested, when she was younger, in all the things that made twins different. She had arced her path away from Karen's at every opportunity. If Karen liked a thing, it seemed like Vic had always been determined not to like it, to choose something, anything else. Karen had not wanted to be different. She would not have minded company for the ride. For the ride. Confidential, it had said. But maybe, after all, this was why she had come. "Well," she said to her sister, younger than she was by 2 minutes. "Something big. Yuyan." Robert got the apartment. He was elated with his purchase and with all his Singles Day items and talked nonstop about them, not noticing that Yuyan was silent by his side, with the occasional flash of a smile when it seemed to be required. Passage. For one. But she wasn't really single, and she had her own passenger. "It will be so good to have our own space, to be alone together," she ventured. It was true. She had been waiting a long time, like Lady Whitesnake, waiting for their chance. For the first time all afternoon, Robert was quiet. "It will be lovely, sweetling," he said eventually. "But I think we should be careful not to ruin our opportunities here. Of course, I want you there, often. But if we hold off on declaring ourselves a couple, just another year, or maybe two, we can really build our financial future. We still have to get a VR hub and a dishwasher and so many things for the new apartment. Just a couple more Singles Days and we should be all set up." Hundreds of years, Lady Whitesnake had waited, lifetimes. Yuyan smiled at him. "Confidential," the message had said. She wouldn't tell Robert. Not just now, not yet. But she had something else to tell him, and perhaps that other thing should not be confidential anymore. Secret child. unknown child. Unbidden child. So she took a quick breath, smiled, and told him. When Yuyan had found out about the baby, she had smiled, but not quickly, or as a shocked reaction, or for anyone else. Alone in her parents' bathroom, she just smiled, slow and true. How was it possible that you could want something so deeply and so much and not even know it for so long?
I don't think it's a good time for us, not yet, Robert was saying. We haven't even talked about if that is something we should do.
He talked on about how it was wrong to bring new people into the world, with the strain on the planet what it was, socially irresponsible, he said, financially crippling.
But we'll make it work. We'll have to. We will, he said finally. If that's what you want.
If that is what she wanted. Child of an overrun world, crowded child, lonely child, shocking child. What she'd wanted, she realized, was for him to smile. Perhaps it was unfair. Perhaps she should allow him the time to get over the shock and adjust. Perhaps she was socially irresponsible, and the world was full up and could not fit one more child. But she wanted him to smile.